For some months now, I have been living as governess at Thornfield Hall. The house is comfortable, my pupil lively and eager. I have met my employer, Mr. Rochester, only briefly since my arrival. He rides out in the morning and does not come back till late at night.
Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte. Dramatized for radio in 4 episodes by Micheline Wonder. Starring Sophie Thompson as Jane Eyre and Kieran Hines as Mr. Rochester. With Anne Stallybrass and Elizabeth Bell. Episode 2. Jane, the Governess.
One evening after dinner, Mr. Rochester summons me to his presence.
Draw the chair nearer, Miss Eyre. Miss Eyre, you're still too far back. Draw your chair a little further forward. I can't see you without disturbing my position, which I have no mind to do.
I would far rather remain in the shadow.
And so you may wish, but I am master here and you'll obey me.
Very well, sir.
You examine me, Miss Eyre. Do you think me handsome?
No, sir.
By my word. Quaint, quiet, grave and simple. You sit with your hands before you and your eyes generally bent on the carpet. And when one asks you a question, you rap out a round rejoinder, which, if not blunt, is at least brusque. What do you mean by it?
Sir, I beg your pardon. I ought to have said that it is not easy to give an impromptu answer to a question about appearances, that tastes mostly differ, and that beauty is of little consequence.
Speak to me.
What about, sir?
Whatever you like.
If you expect me to talk for the mere sake of talking, you will find you have addressed the wrong person.
Miss Eyre, I beg your pardon. I don't wish to treat you like an inferior. I claim only such superiority as must result from 20 years' difference of age and a century's advance of experience. I simply desire you to have the goodness to talk to me a little.
If I can, sir. But I cannot introduce a topic if I do not know what would interest you. I do not think, sir, you have the right to command me merely because you are older than I, or because you have seen more of the world than I have.
But you must still agree to receive my orders now and then without being hurt by the tone of command. Will you?
Well, you are peculiar. You seem to forget that you pay me £30 per annum for receiving your orders.
Then, on that mercenary ground, will you agree to let me hector a little?
No, sir. Not on that ground. But on the ground that you care whether or not a dependent is comfortable in her dependency, I agree heartily.
Not one in 3,000 school governesses would have answered me as you have just done. But perhaps I go too fast in my conclusions. You may have intolerable defects to counterbalance a few good points.
And so may you.
Yeah, you're right. I have plenty of faults. I was thrust onto a wrong tack at the age of 21 and have never recovered the right course since. I envy your peace of mind, your clean conscience, your unpolluted memory. A memory without blot or contamination must be an exquisite treasure, an inexhaustible source of pure refreshment. I might have been as good as you.
How was your memory when you were 18, sir?
I was quite your equal at 18. I'm not a villain, mind. Nature meant me to be a good man. I'm merely a trite, commonplace sinner. When fate wronged me, I had not the wisdom to remain cool. I turned desperate. And then I degenerated. When you attempted to err, Miss Eyre, remorse is the poison of life.
Repentance is said to be its cure, sir.
Reformation may be its cure, and I could reform, but I have a right to get pleasure out of life. I mean to get it, sweet and fresh as the wild honey the bee gathers on the moor.
It will sting, it will taste bitter, sir.
How do you know? And you have no right to preach to me.
I only remind you of your own words, sir. You said error brought remorse, and you pronounced remorse the poison of existence.
Now, Miss Eyre, you are not my conscience keeper.
You said you were not as good as you would like to be, and that you regretted your own imperfections. It seems to me that if you tried hard, you would in time find it possible to become what you yourself would approve.
Where are you going?
To put Isabella to bed. It's past her bedtime.
You're afraid of me because I talk like a sphinx.
Your language is enigmatical, sir, but though I am bewildered, I am certainly not afraid.
Oh, you are afraid. Your self-love dreads a blunder.
In that sense, I do feel apprehensive. I have no wish to talk nonsense.
Now, if you did, it would be in such a grave, quiet manner, I should mistake it for sense. Do you never laugh, Miss Eyre?
Yes, sir. Look at my dress, mademoiselle, and my shoes. I can dance. Oh, monsieur, I thank you a million times. Mademoiselle, what color is this called?
Rose-colored satin, Adela.
I can curtsy, just like my maman.
Precisely as your maman would have done,
please,
my child.
Come, Adela, it is past nine.
Oh, but mademoiselle.
You shall wear your lovely dress another day. Say goodnight to Mr. Rochester.
Good night, monsieur.
Good night, Adela.
Good night, sir.
Miss Eyre, will you walk with me tomorrow after breakfast?
As you please, sir.
As I command?
As you command. Mr. Rochester, would you tell me something about Adela and her parentage?
Well, she is the daughter of a French opera dancer towards whom I once cherished a grand passion.
I see.
No, you do not. She professed to return my passion, and so much was I flattered by this preference of the Gallic sylph for her British gnome that I installed her in a hotel, gave her a complete establishment of servants, a carriage, cashmere, diamonds. In short, I began the process of ruining myself in the received style. I pulled an old trap. I happened to call one evening when Celine did not expect me. I found her out. You understand?
I think so.
I sat in the balcony eating chocolates, and then I heard a carriage. She was returning. My heart thumped with impatience. The carriage stopped. She alighted. Then a figure jumped from the carriage after her, cloaked also. You've never felt jealousy, have you, Miss Eyre? Of course not. I need not ask you, because you've never felt love. Your soul sleeps. You cannot see the rocks bristling. But I tell you, you will come someday to a craggy pass in the channel where the whole of life's stream will be broken up into a whirl of tumult. And either you will be dashed to atoms or lifted up and borne by some wave into a calmer current.
Mr. Rochester!
There she was, and satin and jewels, all my gifts. A companion in an officer's uniform, brainless youth whom I sometimes had met in society.
Monsieur!
A woman who could betray me with such a rival was not worth contending for. She deserved only scorn.
Adela will be here any moment.
I drew back the curtain. I liberated Celine from my protection, gave her notice to vacate her hotel, disregarded screams, hysterics, prayers, and convulsions, and made an appointment with the Viscount for a meeting at the Bois de Boulogne. Next morning, I left a bullet in one of his arms.
And Adela?
6 months before, Celine had given me the child, who she affirmed was my daughter. Perhaps she may be. But I see no proof of such grim paternity written in her countenance. My dog is more like me than she.
Madame Fairfax has prepared the coffee, monsieur.
Thank you, Adela.
I like Thornfield, Miss Eyre. It's old crow trees, its grey facade, and lines of dark windows. Come, let us go in.
From now on, when Mr. Rochester meets me, he has a word and sometimes a smile. He likes to open my mind to glimpses of the world and its ways. I am so content with this new interest that I cease to pine after kindred. His presence in a room is more cheering than the brightest fire. I do not forget his faults. He is proud, sardonic, harsh to inferiority of every description. 8 weeks pass.
What is it? Oh, what do you want? Who is that? Who is there? Pilot? Is that you?
Go away.
Good dog. Who is there? Grace? Is that you? Oh, perhaps she is ill. I must find Mrs. Fairfax.
A candle burns on the matting in the gallery. The air is dim, filling with smoke. Something is burning. Mr. Rochester's room. Smoke rushes in a cloud from under his door. Tongues of flame dart around his bed. The curtains are on fire. In the midst of blaze and vapor, Mr. Rochester lies stretched, motionless, in a deep sleep. Mr. Rochester, wake! Please wake up! Oh. What did I do? The edges of the sheets are singed. Water, a jug, quickly. Wake up, Mr. Rochester, please. Wake, Mr. Rochester, wake up.
What is it? What happened?
There has been a fire. Get up, too, please.
In the name of all the elves in Christendom, is that Jane Eyre? What have you done with me, a witch? Sorceress, imprisoned in brown mist.
Somebody has set fire to your room. I will light your candle, sir. There.
The bed's drenched. Carpet swimming in water. What has happened?
Something, a sound, a sort of laugh woke me. I heard footsteps, I smelt smoke, and then I saw the fire in your room. You were asleep, so I deluged you with all the water I could lay my hands on. Oh, thank goodness you're safe. Shall I call Mrs. Fairfax?
No. Let her sleep. Sit in the armchair and place your feet on the stool to keep him out of the wet. I'm going to leave you for a few minutes. Now remain here until I return.
But where are you going?
And do not move or call anyone. Please.
I watch the candlelight withdraw. Mr. Rochester passes along the gallery and closes the door to the third story. The last ray vanishes. I am in total darkness. A very long time elapses. Well, sir?
Did you see anyone when you opened your chamber door?
No, sir.
But you heard something?
Yes, sir. I heard a laugh. There is a woman who sews here called Grace Poole. She laughs in that way.
Just so, Grace Poole. Please return to your own room. Say nothing about tonight. I shall do very well on the library sofa for the rest of the night.
Good night then, sir.
What? Are you quitting me already?
Well, you said I might go, sir.
But not without taking leave. Not without a word or two of acknowledgement and goodwill. Why, you have saved my life. Snatched me from a horrible and excruciating death, and you walk past me as if we were mutual strangers. At least, shake hands.
Very well.
I take a pleasure in owing you so immense a debt. I cannot say more.
There is no better obligation to me.
I knew that you would do me good. I saw it in your eyes when I first beheld you. Now, people talk of natural sympathies. There are grains of truth in the wildest fable. My cherished preserver. Good night.
Sir, you still have my hand.
Indeed. Why, I do. So I do.
I think I hear Mrs. Fairfax move, sir.
You are determined to go, I see. Well, leave me. There. You have your hand back.
Good night. But I do not sleep again. I am tossed on a buoyant but unquiet sea. Now and then a freshening gale, wakened by hope, bears my spirit triumphantly towards the shore. But I cannot reach it. A breeze blows off the land and continually drives me back. My heart beats fast. I want to hear Mr. Rochester's voice again. I want to see his face. After breakfast, I go past his room. A woman sits on a chair by the bedside, sewing rings to new curtains.
Good morning, Grace.
Oh, morning, miss.
Do you know what happened here?
A master was reading in his bed last night. He fell asleep with his candle lit and the curtains got on fire. Very careless of him. Fortunately, he woke before the bedclothes or the woodwork caught and contrived to quench the flames.
Did Mr. Rochester wake nobody?
Well, Mrs. Fairfax said she heard nothing. But she sleeps heavy. You're young, miss, and perhaps a light sleeper. Did you hear a noise?
Well, I did hear a laugh. A strange laugh.
Indeed. It's hardly likely Master would laugh, I should think, miss, when he was in such danger. You must have been dreaming.
I was not dreaming.
Were you afraid?
Of course. In future, I shall take care to make all secure before I venture to lie down.
I always think it best to err on the safe side. The door is easily fastened.
Thank you for your advice, Mrs. Poole.
You will excuse me now, Miss Eyre. I must go down to the kitchen for my tea.
I'm afraid you're not well today, Miss Eyre. You look flushed and feverish.
Oh, I'm quite well. I never felt better.
Then you must prove it by evincing a good appetite. Will you fill the teapot?
Certainly.
Mr. Rochester has a favourable day for his journey.
Journey? Is Mr. Rochester gone somewhere?
He has gone to Mr. Edgerton's place, 10 miles the other side of Millcote. He set off straight after breakfast.
Do you expect him back tonight?
Oh, I think he will very likely stay a week or more. When these fine, fashionable people get together, they are in no hurry to separate. The ladies are very fond of Mr. Rochester, though you would not think his appearance calculated to recommend him.
What ladies?
Mrs. Edgerton and her 3 daughters, and the Honourable Blanche Ingram. Blanche came here 6 years ago, when she was a girl of 18, to a Christmas party Mr. Rochester gave. She was considered the belle of the evening.
What did she look like?
Tall, with such a long, graceful neck. A fine head of hair, raven black, arranged with a crown of thick plaits and the glossiest curls I ever saw. She was dressed in pure white, with an amber-coloured scarf and an amber-coloured flower in her hair.
She sounds very beautiful.
Yes, indeed. And accomplished. She and Mr. Rochester sang a duet.
Oh, I was not aware Mr. Rochester could sing.
Oh, he has a fine bass voice.
And this beautiful and accomplished lady is not yet married?
It appears not.
I wonder no wealthy nobleman or gentleman has taken a fancy to her. Mr. Rochester, for instance, he is rich, is he not?
Oh, yes. But there is a considerable difference in age. Mr. Rochester is nearly 40. She is but 25.
What of that?
Oh, I should scarcely fancy Mr. Rochester would entertain an idea of that sort.
A greater fool than Jane Eyre has never breathed. You, a favorite with Mr. Rochester. You, gifted with the power of pleasing him. Oh, fool. He said something in praise of your eyes last night, did he? Blind puppy. He is your superior.
Ooh.
Do you imagine he might marry you?
Marry?
Well, Jane Eyre, this is your sentence. Imagine your picture in the glass. Portrait of a governess, disconnected, poor and plain. Now imagine the loveliest face, the softest shades and sweetest hues. Remember the raven ringlets. Miss Blanche Ingram, a lady of accomplished rank. A week passes, and no news of Mr. Rochester. 2 weeks pass.
Mr. Rochester is to return next Thursday. Jane, you've spilled your coffee.
Oh, dear.
He sends directions for all the best bedrooms to be prepared. Well, Jane, I shall need you. Oh, you'll have to learn to make custards and cheesecakes and French pastry, to truss game and garnish dessert dishes. The party are expected to arrive on Thursday afternoon in time for dinner at 6.
Carpets are laid, bed hangings festooned, radiant white counterpanes spread, toilet tables arranged, furniture rubbed, flowers piled in vases, floors scoured, the great carved clock polished to the brightness of glass. The sideboard is resplendent with plates, the drawing room and boudoir full of flowers. Thursday is here. Two open carriages, fluttering veils and waving plumes fill the vehicles. Two of the horsemen, a dashing young gentleman. The third is Mr. Rochester on his black horse. At his side rides a lady, her purple riding habit almost sweeping the ground, her veil streaming in the breeze. Majestic, mysterious.
You are requested to come into the drawing room after dinner. But with Adela, of course.
What am I to do there, Mrs. Fairfax?
Well, go into the drawing room before the ladies leave the dinner table. Choose a seat in any quiet nook. You need not stay long after the gentlemen come in unless you please. Just let Mr. Rochester see you are there and then slip away.
A flock of white plumy birds. The Dowager Lady Ingram, between 40 and 50, her hair, by candlelight, still black, her teeth still apparently perfect. A fierce and hard eye reminds me of Mrs. Reed. Blanche is molded like a Diana, with sloping shoulders, a graceful neck, dark eyes and black ringlets, just as Mrs. Fairfax described. Genius is said to be self-conscious. I cannot tell whether Miss Ingram is a genius, but she is self-conscious. Remarkably self-conscious.
Bonjour, madame.
Why, you must be Mr. Rochester's ward, the little French girl. Give me a kiss, ma chérie. What a love of a child. Come and sit with us. We can speak French to you.
Oh, oui, mademoiselle.
The window curtain half hides me.
Ah, Adela.
Monsieur.
Concentrate on my needles, on the silver beads and silk threads that lie in my lap. There he is. His massive brow, strong features, firm, grim mouth, all energy, decision, will, are not beautiful according to rule, but they are beautiful to me. I feel akin to him. I have not intended to love him. I understand the language of his countenance and movements. Though rank and wealth sever us, I have something in my brain and heart, in my blood, in my nerves, that assimilates me to him.
Mr. Rochester, I thought you were not fond of children.
Nor am I.
Then what induced you to take charge of such a little doll as that? Where did you pick her up?
I did not pick her up. She was left on my hands.
You should have sent her to school.
Oh, I could not afford it.
I suppose you have a governess for her? I've had a dozen, at least half of them detestable and the rest of them ridiculous.
Indeed.
Oh, the whole tribe is a nuisance. Senor Eduardo, are you in voice tonight?
Donna Bianca, if you demand it, I will be. Commands from Miss Ingram's lips will put spirit into a mug of milk and water.
Take care, then. If you don't please me, I will punish you.
Well, Miss Ingram ought to be clement, for she has within her the power to inflict a chastisement beyond mortal endurance.
Explain.
Just one of your frowns would be a sufficient substitute for capital punishment.
Sing, then. I command.
Now is my time to slip away.
Excuse me one moment.
Miss Hare.
How do you do, Miss Hare?
I'm very well, sir.
Why did you not come and speak to me just now?
I did not wish to disturb you, sir.
What have you been doing during my absence?
Nothing in particular. Teaching Adela.
And getting a good deal paler. What is the matter?
Nothing at all, sir.
Did you take cold that night? You half drowned me.
Oh, not in the least.
Return to the drawing room. You are deserting too early.
I am tired, sir.
And a little depressed. What about? Tell me.
Nothing, sir. I am not depressed.
But I affirm that you are. So much depressed that a few more words would bring tears to your eyes. Indeed, they are there now, shining and swimming, and her bead has slipped from the lash. If I had time, I would know what this means. But tonight, I excuse you. But understand that so long as my visitors stay, I expect you to appear in the drawing room every evening.
Mr. Rochester, why? You are neglecting me. Come and sing.
Good night, Miss Eyre.
Merry days at Thornfield Hall. How different from the first 3 months of stillness and solitude. The kitchen, the butler's pantry, the servants' hall are equally alive. The saloons are only empty when the blue sky and the genial spring weather call their occupants out into the grounds. The nature of the pain I suffer cannot be explained by the word jealousy. Miss Ingram is beneath jealousy. She is too inferior to excite the feeling. She is showy, but not genuine. She has a fine person, but her mind is poor. She is not good. She is not original. She never offers, nor has, an opinion of her own. If she were a good and noble woman, I should be struggling with jealousy and despair, and then, my heart torn out and devoured, I should admire her, acknowledge her excellence, and be quiet for the rest of my days. One afternoon, when Mr. Rochester is away at Millcote and business, two strangers arrive. The first, a Mr. Mason, elects to wait for Mr. Rochester's return from an excursion and joins the ladies. The second...
I'm afraid the lady has taken a chair in the chimney corner in the library and says nothing shall stir her from it till she gets leave to speak to the ladies.
What does she want?
To tell the gentry their fortunes, she says.
Why, she must be a real sorceress. Let us talk to her. It will be such fun.
She says she wishes to see the governess first. Miss Eyre?
She wishes to see me?
Yes.
Why on earth should she wish to see the governor?
She was most insistent.
What does she look like?
I cannot tell. She has a scarf over her face.
I see. I will go, by all means.
The woman sits in an easy chair at the chimney corner. She wears a red cloak and black bonnet, tied with a striped handkerchief under the chin. She bends over the fire and seems to be reading a little black book by the light of the blaze.
Well, you want your fortune told.
You may please yourself. I ought to warn you I have no faith in fortune telling.
I wonder with what feelings you came to me. I wonder what thoughts were busy in your heart during all the hours you sit in yonder room with the fine people flitting before you like shapes in a magic lantern.
Well, I think about being able to save enough money out of my earnings to set up a school someday in a little house rented by myself.
Oh, a mean nutriment for the spirit to exist on. And sitting in that window seat...
How do you know my habits?
Ah, that is my secret. Sitting in that window seat, do you think of nothing but your future school? Have you no interest in any of the present company who occupy the sofas and chairs before you?
Oh, indeed. When the gestures or looks of a pair seem telling a tale, then it amuses me to watch them.
And what tales do you like best to hear?
Oh, I've not much choice. They generally run on the same theme, courtship, and they promise to end in the same catastrophe, marriage.
Have you never observed that of all the tales told here about matrimony, Mr. Rochester has been favoured with the most lively and continuous?
Is it known that Mr. Rochester is to be married?
Yes, and to the beautiful Miss Ingram.
Shortly?
Appearances would warrant that conclusion, and they will be a superlatively happy pair.
I did not come here to hear Mr. Rochester's fortune. I came to hear my own, and you have told me nothing of it.
Your fortune is yet doubtful. Let me look at your face. Kneel on the rug before me.
Don't keep me long. The fire scorches.
The flame flickers in your eyes. They look soft and full of feeling. Where they cease to smile, they are sad. They turn from me. They will not suffer further scrutiny. As to the mouth, it delights at laughter. It was never intended to be compressed in the eternal silence of solitude. It is a mouth which should speak much and smile often. The forehead declares that reason sits firm. Passions may rage furiously, but judgment still shall have the last word in every eye.
That is enough.
What?
Take off the cloak, sir. This is not right.
You know me, then?
Of course I do. You have been talking nonsense. To make me talk nonsense, it is scarcely fair, sir. May I have your permission to retire now?
No, stay a moment. What have my guests been saying about me?
I do not believe they have discussed you, sir. They were entertaining the stranger.
What stranger?
His name is Mason, sir.
Mason?
He comes with us from the West Indies, Jamaica, I think.
Good God!
Still ill, sir.
You know, I've had a shock, Jane. Please, fetch me a glass of wine from the dining room. And then step quietly up to Mason and whisper in his ear that Mr. Rochester has come and wishes to see him. Show him in here and then leave me.
Yes, sir, but
I don't... Please, do not ask any more of me. Just do as I say.
No! No! Ah! 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 Ah!
Oh, help! 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 Will no one come? Rochester, Rochester, for God's sake, come!
Please, everyone, please, return to your rooms. A servant has had a nightmare. She has taken a fit with fright. Now, please, until the house is settled, she cannot be looked after. Gentlemen, have the goodness to set the ladies an example.
Jane, wait, please.
What is it, sir?
I want you to come with me. Have you a sponge in your room?
Oh, yes, sir.
And salts, volatile salts.
Yes.
You don't turn sick at the sight of blood.
I think I shall not.
Give me your hand. It will not do to risk a fainting fit.
I will not faint, sir.
Warm and steady. Come, up we go to the third story. Take the candle, Jane.
What has happened? His arm is soaked with blood. Oh. Has he fainted?
Hold the candle.
Here, give me the water. Here, ask me his clothes. Put it under his nose.
Now, it's all right, dear fellow.
Is there any danger?
No, no, mere scratch. Now, bear up. I'll fetch a surgeon for you, Jane.
Sir.
I'd like to leave you here with this gentleman for a couple of hours. If he feels faint, put the glass of water to his lips and the salts to his nose. Do not speak to him on any pretext. And, Richard, it will be at the peril of your life if you speak to her. Open your lips and I'll not answer for the consequences.
I can talk to no one. I'm in too much pain.
And here's a sponge, Jane. And remember, no conversation.
Fear not, sir. You are safe now. What secret is it that lives in this house? What mystery breaks out now in fire, now in blood, at the deadest hours of night? What creature is it that has an ordinary woman's face and shape, utters the voice now of a mocking demon, now of a bird of prey? How did this quiet stranger become involved in this web of horror?
Oh.
Yes, sir. Mr. Rochester will be back soon.
He's in here, Carter. Now listen, I give you half an hour to dress the wound, fasten the bandages, and get the patient downstairs. Come on, set to work.
Let me see your wound, sir.
Draw the curtain. Let some light in. Now, my good fellow, how are you?
It's done for me, I fear.
This day fortnight, you'll hardly be a pin the worse for it. You've lost a little blood, that's all.
This wound was not done with a knife.
She bit me. She worried me like a tigress until Rochester got the knife from her.
Well, you should have grappled with her.
I did not expect it. She looked so quiet.
Well, I warned you. I said be on your guard when you go near her.
She said she'd drain my heart.
Come, be silent, Richard. Never mind her gibberish.
I wish I could forget it.
You will when you're out of the country. When you go back to Jamaica, you may think of her as dead and buried, or rather, you need not think of her at all.
It's impossible to forget this.
This is not impossible. Now then, I have a clean shirt and jacket. I'm sure you can stand. Come on, try.
Very well.
Carter, take him under the other shoulder. Now be of good cheer, Richard. Yeah, that's it.
I feel a little better.
Jane.
Yes, sir.
Go to the back stairs, unbolt the side door, and tell the driver of the carriage you'll see in the yard to be ready.
Yes, sir.
Easy does it, Mason. Lean on me. Fairfax, what is it?
Let her be taken care of. Let her be treated as tenderly as may be.
Let her... Look, I'll do my best. Goodbye, Dick.
I wish to God there was an end to all this.
Jane, walk with me a while.
Yes, sir.
It has been a strange night.
It has, sir. Is the danger you apprehended last night gone now, sir?
Yeah, I cannot vouch for that till Mason is out of England, nor even then.
I do not understand.
I dare not tell you.
If you have no more to fear from Mr. Mason than you have from me, sir, you are very safe.
God grant it may be so. Here, Jane, let us sit down, and I will try and explain.
Very well.
I'll put a case to you which you must endeavour to suppose your own.
I am listening.
I suppose you were no longer a girl, well-reared and disciplined, but a wild boy, indulged from childhood. You are in a foreign land. There you commit a capital error whose consequences must follow you through life and taint all your existence. I don't say a crime, just an error. The results of what you have done become, in time, unsupportable. You take measures to obtain relief. Still, you are miserable. Then you come home after years of voluntary banishment. You make a new acquaintance and you find in this stranger much of the good and bright qualities which you have sought for 20 years. You feel better. You desire to recommence your life and to spend what remains to you of days in a way more worthy of an immortal being. To attain this end, are you justified in overleaping an obstacle of custom?
I do not know. I do not understand.
You have noticed my tender penchant for Miss Ingram. Do you think if I married her, she would regenerate me?
I cannot say, sir.
Give me your hand. Oh, what cold fingers. They were warmer last night. Jane, when will you watch with me again?
Whenever I can be useful, sir. But now I must go in, sir. I am very tired. Later that morning, when I have scarce rested, another visitor arrives. Robert, the coachman husband of my old nurse, Bessie. He brings news that my Aunt Reed, from whom I am estranged, has had a stroke and wishes to see me.
Mr. Rogers.
Yes, Jane?
If you please, sir, I want leave of absence for a week or two.
What to do?
To see a sick lady who has just sent for me.
What sick lady? Where does she live?
At Gateshead.
Gateshead? That's 100 miles off. Who may she be that sends for people to see her that distance?
Her name is Reed, sir. Mrs. Reed. Mr. Reed was my uncle, my mother's brother.
You never told me that before. You always said you had no relations.
None that would own me, sir. Mr. Reed is dead, and his wife cast me off because I was poor and burdensome, and she disliked me. Now her son has died, and the news so shocked her that she has fallen very ill.
Well, what good can you do her besides, you say, she cast you out?
Yes, sir, but that was a long time ago when her circumstances were very, very different. I could not bear to neglect her wishes now.
Well, you will come back. You will not be induced under any pretext to take up permanent residence with her.
Oh, no, I shall certainly return if all be well.
When do you wish to go?
Early tomorrow morning, sir.
Well, you must have some money. How much have you in the world, Jane?
5 shillings, sir.
Here, yeah, £10.
Oh, thank you. That is kind.
Well, so you and I must bid goodbye for a little while.
I suppose so, sir. Farewell, Mr. Rochester, for the present.
Oh, what shall I say?
The same, if you like, sir.
Farewell, Miss Eyre, for the present. Is that all?
It is enough, sir. Oh,
Bless you, Miss Jane. I knew you would come.
I trust I'm not too late, Bessie. How is Mrs. Reed?
The doctor says she may linger a week or two yet, but he hardly thinks she will recover. She is sleeping now. You can rest from your journey. Here, some toast for you.
Oh, thank you. Just as it was back in the nursery.
Indeed. Tell me, are you happy at Thornfield Hall? What sort of person is your mistress?
I'm afraid there is only a master.
Oh, is he a nice gentleman?
I think he's rather an ugly man, but he treats me kindly and I'm content.
Oh, Bessie, it is so good to see you again. And you, Miss Jane.
Aunt Reed?
Is this Jane Eyre?
Yes, Aunt. How are you?
You once vowed you would never call me Aunt again.
I think it no sin to break that vow.
There was something I wished to say. Let me see. I cannot remember. Where is Jane Eyre?
I am Jane Eyre.
I've had more trouble with that child than anyone will believe. So much annoyance she causes with her fits of temper. No child ever spoke or looked as he did. I was glad to get her away from the house. What did they do with her at the school? A fever broke out there, and many of the pupils died. She, however, did not die. Though I told everyone she did, I wish she had died.
Why did you hate her so?
I had a dislike for her mother. She was my husband's only sister and a great favorite with him. I am very ill. It is as well. My mind before I die. Is the nurse here?
We are alone.
Well, I have twice done you a wrong, which I regret now. One was in breaking the promise which I gave my husband to bring you up as my own child. The other, well, go to my dressing case, open it, and take out a letter you will see there.
This case?
Yes. Read it.
Madam, will you have the goodness to send me the address of my niece, Jane Eyre, and to tell me how she is? It is my intention to write shortly and desire her to come to me at Madeira. Providence has blessed my endeavours to secure a competency, and as I am unmarried and childless, I wish to adopt her during my life and bequeath her at my death. Whatever I may have to leave, I am Madam John Eyre, Madeira. This is dated 3 years back. Why did I never hear of it?
Because I disliked you too thoroughly to tell you. I could not forget your conduct to me, Jane. The fury with which you once turned on me. The tone in which you declared you hated me. The worst of anybody in the world.
Here, Aunt, drink. Dear Mrs. Reed, forgive me for my passionate language. I was a child then.
I could not forget it, and I took my revenge. I wrote to John Eyre. I said I was sorry for the disappointment. But Jane Eyre was dead. She had died of fever at the school.
Oh, Aunt. Many a time as a little child, I should have been glad to love you if you would have let me.
And I long, earnestly, to be reconciled to you now. Kiss me, aunt.
You oppress me by leaning over the bed.
Next morning, Bessie comes to tell me that all is over. I gaze on Aunt Reed's corpse with gloom and pain. Nothing soft, nothing sweet, nothing pitying, or hopeful, or subduing.
With her constitution, she should have lived to a good old age. Her life was shortened by trouble.
Neither of us sheds a tear. I remain some days longer to arrange my aunt's affairs. And then, on a June evening, I take the old road to Thornfield. I walk the last stretch. The haymakers are at work along the road. The sky promises well. It's blue, mild and settled. It's cloud, high and thin. It seems as if there were a fire lit, an altar burning behind a screen of marbled vapour, and out of the aperture shines a golden redness. The hedges are full of roses. I pass a tall briar. I see the narrow stile with stone steps. And I see Mr. Rochester sitting there, book and pencil in his hand. He is writing.
Mr. Rochester.
Jane.
Well, Jane, is this another of your tricks? You do not send for a carriage to come clattering over the street and road like a common mortal. You steal into your home along with twilight, just as if you were a dream or a shade. What the deuce have you done with yourself this last month?
I have been with my aunt, sir, who is now dead.
Absent from me a whole month. And forgetting me, I'll be sworn.
And you, sir? What have you been doing?
Why, you have neglected me. Oh, I've been to London. To choose a carriage, Jane. I am thinking of marrying.
Sir?
You must tell me if you think it will suit Mrs. Rochester exactly. I wish, Jane, I were a trifle better adapted to match with her externally. Tell me now, fairy as you are, can't you give me a charm or something of that sort to make me a handsome man?
It would be past the power of magic, sir. The loving eye is all the charm needed. For such, you are handsome enough. Your sternness has a power beyond beauty. A fortnight of calm succeeds my return to Thornfield Hall. Nothing more is said of Mr. Rochester's marriage. Never has he called me more frequently to his presence. Never been kinder to me when there. And, alas, never have I loved him so well. It is Midsummer Eve. The sun has gone down in state, spreading a solemn purple, burning with the light of red jewel and the furnace flame on one hill peak and extending high and wide, soft and still softer over half heaven. I walk in the orchard. Sweet briar and jasmine have long yielded their evening sacrifice of incense.
Thornfield is a pleasant place in summer, is it not?
Yes, sir.
You've become attached to Thornfield, I think.
Indeed, I have, sir.
It's always the way of events in this life. No sooner have you got settled in a pleasant resting place than a voice calls out to you to rise and move on. The hour of repose has expired. Jane, I have some news for you.
You are going to be married.
Precisely.
With your usual acuteness, you have hit the nail straight on the head.
Soon, sir?
Very soon, Miss Eyre.
In that case, sir, Adela ought to go away to school.
Of course. And where will you go?
I shall advertise.
You shall walk up the pyramids of Egypt. At your peril, you advertise. Promise me something.
I'll promise you anything, sir, that I think I am likely to perform.
Not to advertise and to trust this quest of a situation to me. I'll find you one when the time comes.
I shall be glad to do so, sir. If you, in turn, will promise that I and Adela shall be safe out of the house before your bride enters it. I cannot remain here once you are married.
Very well, Jane. I agree. Yes, Adela must go to school. And you, Miss Eyre, must take a new situation. You must leave Thornfield.
That was episode 2 of Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte, dramatized for radio by Micheline Wonder. Jane Eyre was played by Sophie Thompson, and Mr. Rochester by Kieran Hines. Mrs. Fairfax was played by Anne Stallybrass, Adela by Una Beeson, Mrs. Reed by Elizabeth Bell, Blanche by Kristin Millwood, Mason by Gavin Muir, Bessie by Elaine Claxton, Grace Poole by Tina Gray, The Woman's Voice by Vivian Rochester, and Carter by Gareth Armstrong. Jane Eyre was directed by Terry Cookson.